And hello, welcome to Phillies Talk. It's the longest running independent podcast talking about those Philadelphia Phillies. Today we'll be talking about the Phillies at the All-Star break, a little bit about the All-Star game, and everything in between like that. Joining me on this show is Mr. Matt Veazey. How are you doing, Matt?
Beautiful, Rich. How are you? How's your summer going so far?
Not bad. Nice and hot. Nice and fast, actually. I can't believe it's middle of July already. We're already talking about the All-Star break, and we're just about here. It's Sunday, July 11th, as we're doing this podcast, and I just can't believe we're at the All-Star break already.
A lot of interesting things coming up. They got the MLB draft tonight. The Phillies have the 13th overall pick. The home run derby is tomorrow, and then you got the All-Star game on Tuesday. The Phillies are going to be off for the next 4 days after today. They don't return until next Friday. They're home for a doubleheader against Miami. So, yeah, like you said, it's moving along. You know, we're at the halfway point of the season. Phils are battling this afternoon, trying to get to the 500 mark at the All-Star break. I guess we can consider that a jump-off point because they've really been struggling a little below the 500 mark until they've picked it up a little lately. Gotten a little hot here in the month of July with the weather.
Yeah, they were, what, about 4 or 5 games under 500 there at one point, and now they're threatening to go into the All-Star game. Can they be 500? I think they could do that with a win today.
That's correct. Yeah, and they're leading right now 5-2. Ball game is in the bottom of the sixth at Fenway Park. So not good. You know, the Phillies are by kind of a little bit of an emergency that popped up. They're going to a bullpen game today there at Fenway Park. Girardi was forced into that by a late scratch, if you will, of Aaron Nola. Alec Bohm, it turns out, tested positive for COVID. So they had, and that was late in the game yesterday. I think he had to be pulled from yesterday's game around the eighth inning. And turned out that Nola and a couple of others, Connor Brogdon, I'm not sure who else, there were about 4 or 5 of Phillies who were scratched today. And it's COVID protocol. I mean, hopefully they don't have it. They'll just test them. It'll turn out that they don't, and they'll be available next week. But I think that Bohm, I'm pretty sure he's down for 10 days. So, you know, it's that scratched Aaron Nola, who was supposed to get the start today. And so the Phillies have gone with a bullpen game, and so far it's worked out. Brandon Kinsler got the start on the mound, a reliever. He went an inning. I think he got into the second. He was only supposed to pitch to 4 batters. That was the whole plan, was for him to start, pitch to 4 batters, because I believe they were right-handers, and then give away to Chris Sanchez, who's a lefty. And it turned out that Kinsler got through the first ones okay, but then he gave up a run there. Sanchez came in, and Sanchez did his job. You know, he pitched 3 innings. He did give up 4 hits and a walk, but got out relatively unscathed. He only gave up 1 run. The Phillies got a couple of runs in the third inning when JT Realmuto got a base hit to tie the game, and there was a Red Sox error, throwing error, trying to get the runner going to third base on Realmuto's hit. Went into the stands, and the Phillies got the go-ahead run on that error. And then we had a blast, 3-run blast from Ronald Torres in the fourth inning to put the Phillies up 5-1. They're now up 5-2 in the bottom of the sixth. And a win there would put them at that 500 mark here at the All-Star break. So looks good right now. You know, we know how the Phillies bullpen has been, but the Phillies bullpen usually, you know, the history that we've seen this year and last year is that they blow games when they come in relief of the Phillies starters. That's not the case here today. The whole game is theirs. So maybe they'll like say, hey, we got the whole game, let's win it for ourselves. So we'll see. You know, Jose Alvarado's in right now. We'll see how this goes. But yeah, they're leading 5-2, about 2/3 of the way through this game.
Yeah, and the Phillies taking on Nick Pivetta earlier on in the game. He's now out of the game, but what a matchup. The Phillies have been facing former Phils all this road trip. And I was listening to a little of the radio broadcast, and I tuned into the game late. And like you said, Aaron Nola was supposed to start. And I heard the first inning pitcher give up the home run. And I said to myself, they're taking a pitcher out already, Aaron Nola, and then realized that he was scratched from the game. But, you know, the Phillies.
I was going to say, you mentioned Pivetta. He's pitched really well for Boston this year, but the Phillies did a good job with him today. He lasted four innings, but they had four hits. He walked a couple of batters. He did have four strikeouts, but they got five runs off him, four of them earned. They got that home run. So even though he's pitched well, the Phillies did handle him pretty well today. So, you know, both teams into the bullpens. So hopefully we can bring this one home.
Yeah, and if you've seen social media or comments from Pivetta in the past, I think it was about a week ago or so, maybe even 10 days now, I was talking about answering a question from one of the Red Sox broadcasters, and he brought up the fact that, oh, I'm glad to be part of a winning team, a team that knows how to win, you know, sort of like elbowing the Phillies a little bit. And that's the way it was reported anyway. He didn't really come out and say, the Phillies stink or anything like that. But it was construed as meaning, he came from the Phillies, so they don't know how to win. So,
well, you know, we'll see. You know, they are 20 games over 500. So, you know, a little braggadocio, and he's had a nice season. He's contributed to it. So, you know, a little braggadocio, I guess, was in order from him, but you got to be careful, you know. If the Phillies are able to pull this one off today, that'll mean the Red Sox will have lost four out of their last five, something like five out of eight, after a big winning streak. And, you know, things can turn around in baseball awfully fast. So, you know, if both for individual players like Pivetta and for a ball club. The Red Sox pitching staff, as far as I'm concerned, especially with a guy like Chris Sale out, they've overachieved a little bit in my estimation. And teams like the Yankees have underachieved. So you could very well see this turn around to the negative side for the Red Sox in the second half. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see if Nick Pivetta can back up his winning team. Meanwhile, you know, the Phillies may go the other way. You know, they're looking to win this series in Boston. You know, they're like, as we mentioned, you know, they've been playing a lot better. They're here in July. I think they're something along the lines of 6-3. They could be 7-3 in July if they win this game. So this is the kind of, you know, again, I don't want to assume a game, you know, you can't ever assume a game, but if we can pull this one out, this is the kind of stretch, you know, that we've been wanting to see the Phillies get on, winning 7 out of 10, you know, and maybe taking that out of the All-Star break. You know, they've got a four game series with Miami, who's always tough on them coming out of the break, but it's at home. They'll have a chance to set their rotation the way they want. And it's a team that they have to start taking advantage of. They are a more talented team than the Marlins. So, you know, next weekend, you know, they got to come out here next weekend, ready to go, and take 3 out of 4 from the Fish. Yeah. And if they can do that, 7 out of 10, 3 out of 4 from Miami, you're talking about, you know, 10 out of 15 then, and you're above 500 by a couple of games. That's what we need to start getting on, that kind of roll. So Dave Dombrowski can then be inspired, you know, to say, hey, you know, the boys look like they got it together. Let's make a couple of deals to bolster this roster.
Yeah, that would be fun if they did that. I'd love to see the Phillies in buy mode at the end of July, and we'll see if they can keep stringing this together. It's weird how the Phillies have been on some sort of roller coaster. Sometimes they're down, sometimes they're going up. I did want to try to schedule this podcast around the Chicago games, and that would have been nice, but I think it actually worked out better for this podcast to record now, because the Phillies looked great in Chicago. I don't know if it was the Chicago Cubs looking so bad, or was it the Phillies that were looking so great, but they went into Chicago and practically owned the town there for a few days.
Yeah, the Cubs are really struggling, and their GM has put it out there that, you know, Jed Hoyer has basically said, he's president of baseball operations there, and he's basically said that they are going to be in sell mode at this, you know, at this trade deadline as it pops up. And that's you know, a little bit hard to believe if you look at what happened over the first couple of months of the season.
Yeah,
the Cubs were rolling along. They were playing really well. At one point, they were 11 games over 500 in the middle of June. They were 11 games over 500. Then they went into just a horrific, before the Phillies arrived, they were on something along the lines of an 11-game, something like a 9-game losing streak, and the Phillies, you know, pushed that out even further. So looking at last night, the Cubs got shut out 6-0 by the Cardinals. That put them 2 games under 500. And remember what I said, Rich, less than a month ago, they were 11 games over 500. As late as June 24th, they were still 9 games over 500. So they have gone, let me do my math, they've gone 2-13. They've lost 13 out of 15. So, you know, the Phillies ran into the Cubs at the right time, if you will, and took advantage of it. They won that series, and that's important. You know, you got to take advantage of teams that are down. And unfortunately, you know, we may have spoke too soon about giving the Phillies this game, because now, well, we're not down, but we've given up a couple of runs. Alvarado has given up a couple of runs here in the sixth inning, and it's now 5-4 Phillies lead.
Yeah, it would figure that the Phillies couldn't hold a lead. I mean, no lead is
so
safe.
So far they have.
with the Phillies bullpen. I just put up Saved by the Bell, so to speak. The Cubs rained out today at Wrigley, right in time to save their bacon for a game, give them some rest. Interestingly enough, the Cardinals and the Cubs with the same record rained out at Wrigley, 44-46 today. Amazing that the way this works out sometimes.
Yeah, St. Louis perennially, you know, it's kind of like the Cardinals and Yankees, you know, both perennial contenders in the American and National Leagues. They've won the most World Series titles in each league, but both have struggled this season. The Cardinals are a little bit the opposite of the Cubs in that they were as late as June 25th, so around the last time the Cubs were at their high water mark, the Cardinals were 4 games under 500. Now they're 2 under 500, so they've gained a little equilibrium there. Let me do my math here again. They've won 7 out of 12 now, so I mean that's not a big winning stretch, but they've been able to play a little bit better baseball. They won a series against the Giants before the, and that was in San Francisco before the Cubs came in, split the first 2 games with the Cubs, with this one postponed. So, you know, they come out of the break, the Cubs do, trying to get that equilibrium back, as you discussed, playing Arizona. And Arizona's been miserable this year. So while that series is in Arizona, the Cubs will have a chance to maybe get themselves back together. And then they and St. Louis then have a big 4-game series in St. Louis right after that. So some interesting ball games there in the Central Division, where the Milwaukee Brewers have really taken command. They've gone crazy over there in the Central Division and really taken charge.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw this, but in the last couple of games, I'll put it up on the screen for anybody watching YouTube. Certain teams are getting a third jersey designed by Nike, uniform. In fact, there's the Miami Marlins, alternate, whatever you want to call it, jersey. It almost looks kind of clownish if you look at it with the colors.
Yeah, some of them remind me of softball jerseys, and some of them are ugly, frankly. The All-Star game jerseys, they don't do anything for me. Traditionally, players wore their team jersey in the All-Star game, which is the way I think it should be. But MLB decided to go with a National League jersey and an American League jersey this year. This is, you know, there can be for no other reason other than marketing, but the jerseys are ugly. I mean, I've read all manner of comments on the internet, and I don't think I've seen a positive comment yet. I can't imagine they're going to sell too many of these things. So maybe the idea of having a National League and an American League jersey isn't a bad idea, you know, but uh-huh. they're going to have to go back to the drawing board on the design of these things.
That's true. A lot of teams showing a lot of sizes sold out on MLB.com on the store shop, but I suspect they didn't make very many of them because, as you said, they're just plain ugly. Don't know if you plan on watching the All-Star game. There's some movement afoot to boycott the game for reasons of the MLB moving the game out of Atlanta. What's your feelings on that?
Well, my feelings on that are the way it is. I mean, Major League Baseball, this was nothing more than a woke political move. The people of Atlanta, the city of Atlanta, the business community in Atlanta, hotels, restaurants, they've been anticipating, looking forward to, preparing for this All-Star game for years. And then to a couple of months before the game's to go on, to pull it out from under their rug, it's just, you know, completely unfair. It's a woke political move by the powers that be in Major League Baseball and nothing more. Of course, we're like within weeks of MLB pulling the All-Star game and moving it to Denver, a court came down and basically said there's nothing wrong with the Georgia voting laws. The voting laws in Colorado, some of those voting laws are more restrictive than the ones in Georgia that MLB was concerned about. So, you know, it's a political move is all it was. And it's a shame. It's a real shame that sports in general, athletes, Major League Baseball in particular, in this instance, are using what is an entertainment medium to send a political message. For me, there's no place for negative political messages, or for even for positing a candidate, if you will, or a party or a platform. To celebrate our nation, to me, is a different story. When we're having this Star Spangled Banner before the game, when someone's singing our national anthem, to take a moment to honor America and the brave soldiers, sailors, Marines, pilots who have suffered and sacrificed, given their limbs, given their lives for our country over the centuries, to kind of take a moment to honor them and to acknowledge that we live in, no matter what our, and we do have warts, no matter what our warts are, that we live in the freest, the greatest nation in the history of the world, to take a moment to recognize that and to celebrate and to honor America and the great Americans who have come before us and who are here still with us now, who are still out there serving every day to keep our nation safe. That, to me, is wholly appropriate. Take 2 or 3 minutes to do the national anthem and to do it respectfully. But outside of that, political messaging, you know, banners about political parties or candidates, kneeling on the sidewalk because you protest, you know, something that's going on politically in the nation. There's no place for it as far as I'm concerned. You know, I'm one guy. You know, somebody else feels different. I'm not going to tell you how to feel. But and as far as boycotting, my father taught me a lesson decades ago, which was that if you start boycotting everything, company, person, product that disagrees with you on political or social issues, your choices are going to be so whittled down. I try to take on the way that I operate as being, I try not to care about what somebody else's political agenda is, or what their message is, or what their position is. I have mine. I don't ask, you know, Bruce Springsteen or Ben and Jerry or, you know, the people at CNN. I don't ask them to believe the things that I believe, to vote the way that I vote. And I would assume that they're not going to do that to me. You know, you got your way, I got my way. And there are hundreds, tens of millions of people who agree with me in most of my positions. There are tens of millions of people who agree with those people in their positions. Yeah. So be it, you know, this is America. So I listen to music. I have artists that I believe, you know, that I enjoy their music. I have actors that I enjoy the way that they work. I have foods, you know, that I will eat, you know, from, I don't go looking at every, you know, and they would say, what was their position on, you know, abortion? What did they, who did their company give money to in the last election? I can't be bothered with following through on all that. Now, if somebody goes out of their way to blatantly attack, like, you know, I had a 30-year career in law enforcement. I'm a pro law enforcement person. If somebody's going to go out of their way to demonize a profession, an entire profession, then that person is going to, you know, have a hard time getting my support. But political, you know, you're on your side, you're on, you know, I'm on a different side. That stuff really doesn't bother me too much. You know, I'll take my fun pot shots, you know, on social media and my personal accounts and stuff like that. But, you know, that's political, you know, that's political commentary that we're all allowed to make. As far as the boycotting the Major League Baseball All-Star game, I frankly don't know. I'm not one of these people that sits down when the Major League Baseball game, All-Star game is on these days and watches the whole thing from start to finish. I don't do that anyway. So what'll probably happen is my wife and I'll be sitting around and I'll be doing something on the internet and she'll be watching something on television. Yeah. And a commercial, I'll check on the game, you know, here and there. And like anything else, you know, I'll check in on it a few times, especially if, in the beginning, I may watch, you know, if we have JT catching, and I think JT Realmuto has been announced as the starting catcher now for the National League. And there's a good chance that Zach Wheeler could be the starting pitcher. So I may, tune in for the beginning, see some introductions, watch those two guys perform in the beginning. But, you know, I'm not going to sit there and watch the whole game. It's not that I'm not watching the whole game isn't because I'm boycotting it. That's the bottom line. So,
yeah, and it's going to be a situation where, as you said, there are going to be a couple of Phillies players there, including Zach Wheeler. And I think Jacob DeGrom is not going to start that game. I'm pretty sure. Don't know if he's even going with.
I think he bowed out.
Yeah.
I think he's one of the many. There were many, many players who bowed out for various reasons. You know, here in town, Bryce Harper made the comment and he took a little bit of heat, not too much, but he took a little bit of heat for saying that there was a good chance if he had been named to the All-Star game this year that he would have skipped it because of he'd rather spend some time with his family. He just had a baby. He's got some physical, you know, nagging physical things that 4 days off would be nice to rest. So, I think that he took less heat for that than he might have, because right away, like in the immediate aftermath, and even during that time that he was making that announcement, a number of players across Major League Baseball publicly made the same proclamation. Players who had been named to the team, some of them starters on the team. So it's not like Bryce Harper's hanging out there like as the one guy who says, I wouldn't have gone if you had picked me. Well, there's a lot of guys who aren't going and were picked. So I don't really, frankly, you know, it'd be nice if Bryce Harper was in the All-Star game. It'd be nice if he was in the home run derby. But, you know, he'll have many years. He's an outstanding player. You know, he'll have a number of years where I'm sure at some point down the road, he'll get in the All-Star game again. But right now, I'm looking at the Phillies. I'm looking at the Phillies at hopefully 500 at the All-Star break, hopefully make a move on the Mets in the second half. And Phillies need Bryce Harper 100% healthy as possible, ready to go. And I'd rather right now, frankly, see him get a 4-day break, give his body a chance to rest and heal and be ready to go when we hit the ground running again on Friday, you know.
Yeah, and all of the Astros representatives are not going to the game for one reason or another.
Yeah, they had two guys, starters, I believe, and then they had a couple guys they tried to add on as additions, and those guys backed out. I think Michael Brantley was one of them. So, yeah, you're right. There are going to be, from what I heard yesterday, no Houston Astros, at least at this point, representing the team in the All-Star game.
Yeah, and the number of first-timers to the All-Star game is pretty high. I think it's reported as being 40 players going to the All-Star game for the first time. So going to be an odd event for them. And that'll match with their odd uniforms. So
Yeah, right. Well, you know, there are a lot of emerging good young ball players in the game today. So it'll be good to see some of those guys like Vlad Guerrero Jr. And Fernando Tatis Jr. and others. It's a real shame that we lost Ronald Acuna. The game lost Ronald Acuna. I don't know if you caught that yet, but he suffered an injury and now he's going to be out for the season. That's good news for, if you will, for Phillies fans. You know, the Phillies were tied with the Braves in the loss column entering today. I think 5 games behind the Mets, but it's a shame for the game. You know, Acuna is one of those, you know, rare talents. He's a rising up and coming ball player. One of the handful of best players, you know, in the National League, certainly, maybe in all of baseball. So, he'll be out of the All-Star game, obviously, but, you know, more importantly, he's out for the season. So it's a shame we won't get to see him display his talents in the All-Star game. But there are a lot of really good young ball players that maybe this will be a showcase for them. Shohei Ohtani. I mean, what a tremendous story he has been for the game in the first half. And we're going to see him in the Home Run Derby. It's a shame he can't pitch to himself in the Home Run Derby, but that would be interesting to see. Ohtani against Ohtani.
Underhand lob.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see if they pitch him. I'm hearing some rumors that he's going to both pitch and hit in the All-Star game. So, that would be appropriate, I think, from what we've seen in the first half. I mean, the guy has been phenomenal on both sides of the ball. So, that'll be something to look forward to maybe in the All-Star game.
Yeah, of course, the pandemic canceled last year's event. They did not hold it. And it'll be the first time in 23 years that the All-Star game is being held at Denver at Coors Field. So long time wait for them. I'm starting to think about the Phillies in 2026. They're supposed to host this game, but God knows what's going to happen anymore with this, you know, knee-jerk
this world.
MLB. Yeah.
Well, you know, you got to plan on what you can plan on. You know, you can't plan on the unusual. You know, so, you know, right now we're supposed to get the game in 2026. It's 5 years off. It's something to look forward to, but it's still 5 years away. You know, we got a lot of things to worry about before then. So,
yes, we do. So we'll keep an eye on
that. Like this game today, where we only have a 5-4 lead into the bottom of the seventh. So
yeah, we're clinging by a thread to get back to 500 Phillies.
Yeah, Archie Bradley's on the mound right now for the Phillies. He got retired the first batter in the seventh inning.
That's apropos for the Phillies, though. They can't get out of this thing without 12 jams at least.
I'm going to be curious how Girardi navigates the rest of this game, too, because he lost Brogdon. We know that, to the COVID situation, and he started Kinsler. He's used Sanchez, and he's already gone through Hector Neris, Jose Alvarado. Now Archie Bradley's on the mound now, and Bradley doesn't typically go more than one inning. Maybe he'll go two today, but he's going to have to get through, another two and two-thirds innings, you know, having burned a lot of his relievers. I'm not even sure who's left in the bullpen. He's got De Los Santos. He's got, I know they called up J.D. Hammer. They called up a lefty, Damon Jones, young righty, Lavera. He's got Ranger Suarez, I guess, still available. So we'll probably see Suarez, and maybe he may give J.D. Hammer a shot. So we'll see.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting.
The Phillies can hang on by a thread and win this game, go into the All-Star break at 500. I think we would view that as a win.
Yes.
When just a few days ago.
Yeah, have to.
Yeah, the Phillies were reeling. They needed a win. Couldn't get it.
Hopefully we look back at this Cubs series and say, you know, that, really the month of July, turning the calendar to the month of July, but especially that Cubs series, maybe we'll look back in the end and say, hey, that's where they turned their season around. So,
yeah, it was a big turning point for them. You talked a little bit about Bryce Harper earlier in the podcast. Has he been pulling his weight for the Phillies to maximum potential, do you think?
Yeah, I think he has. Bryce did, you know, there's no doubt that Bryce struggled with runners in scoring position for the first couple of months of the season. And it was there was a lot made about his having, you know, all solo home runs. I think something along the lines of his first 13 home runs maybe were all solo home runs. But Bryce is hitting .283. He's got a .380 on base percentage, slugging .525. His OPS is .905. 15 homers is second on the team. 34 RBIs are down, but you know, half of that was his early season struggles with runners in scoring position, and half of that was guys not getting on when he had delivered hits. Their guys weren't getting on in front of him. The Phillies lineup has really just been able to get itself together from numerous different guys suffering numerous injuries that had kind of kept the lineup itself a little bit disjointed for a long time. Bryce himself missed about 2/5 of the games, I think, over the first half of the season or first third of the season with various injuries. So, you know, stymied a little bit by injury, stymied a little bit by failure to produce a runners in scoring position, stymied a little bit by the lineup being disjointed and not producing in front of him. But it seems to be starting to come back together over the last couple of weeks. And overall, if you look at Bryce's numbers, except for the RBIs, Bryce's numbers are good. They're not just, you know, average. They're good numbers. He's having a good season, except for RBI. And he's picked that up a little bit here in the month of July. So, you know, I'm hoping for big things from Bryce in the second half. I don't think that he's let the team down at all. There have been a number of other players who, you know, whose performance has let the team down. And, you know, biggest problem, I think, right now for the team is maybe the biggest question to resolve is, you know, fixing this bullpen. You know, last year the problems were so horrendous and obvious, but it hasn't really improved much this year. They still don't have a guy who you can go to the ninth inning and say, you know, nine or even eight out of 10 times, ball game over. Yeah. You know, it's in our favor.
The stopper.
A stopper. Now, you know, is Craig Kimbrell going to be available? Could the Phillies pick up a guy like Craig Kimbrell? Do they have what it takes to swing that kind of deal? He would seem to answer an obvious need, you know, and that's a fit. You know, the Cubs are looking to unload some people. So people around here talk a lot about Chris Bryant because of the Vegas connection, and he knows Bryce real well. They're old buddies, an old travel team, you know, pals. And I wouldn't turn down having Chris Bryant on the Phillies, especially if he can extend them for the next few years. But maybe more of a need for the Phillies right now is a guy like Craig Kimbrell from the Cubs. So, you know, I don't know if they can swing, Dombrowski can swing some kind of package to bring both of those guys here, which would be nice. I just don't know how high our expectations can be knowing what the Phillies have to offer as far as, you know, players and prospects. At least prospects they'd be willing to trade. Now, beyond that, you know, you still got the problem down at the fifth starter spot. Maybe even the fourth starter spot, you know, Wheeler, Nola, Eflin. Where do you go after that? You know, how much do you trust Matt Moore? You know, we certainly don't trust Vince Velasquez anymore. You know, if we ever did trust Vince Velasquez the last few years. So, you know, they need a starter. They need a starting pitcher. A reliable starting pitcher, hopefully a more proven one, you know, somebody who can come in here and win ball games down the stretch. There's been some discussion of Cole Hamels in the media and among the fan base. Hamels is going to do a showcase in Texas, I believe, next weekend. So that off of that showcase, he's going to have to prove, and I guess he wouldn't schedule a showcase unless he was healthy. So he's going to have to demonstrate his stuff, show teams that, you know, he not only has interest, still has the fire in his belly, but still has something to offer that can win major league games. But even if he has this showcase next week, then there's going to be, you know, if he looks good, then there are going to be a handful of teams maybe that are looking to sign him. So that process is going to play out over a number of days. So I wouldn't look for Hamels to sign with anybody maybe for a couple more weeks. And then you're talking about he's got to get ready. You know, so he's going to have to go to the minor leagues and get ready, or go to Florida or somewhere under supervision to get ready. I look at this, a Cole Hamels signing, is kind of like Pedro in 2009. If you remember, Pedro Martinez signed with the Phillies, but he didn't start pitching until the middle of August. So, and I think he got something like from the middle of August to the end of the year, I think he maybe got something like 7 or 8 starts in for the Phillies before the postseason. So that's what you're looking at with a Cole Hamels. If you can swing a deal in the next week or two for a ready pitcher, somebody who's ready to go now, that's what the Phillies need. They don't need to wait until the middle of August for a guy. They need a guy in the third week of July, in the fourth week of July. So can you do both?
Unfortunately, what I remember about the 09 debut was Game 6 of the World Series. Back to New York. Who do they start?
But you don't need to, you know, you said unfortunately what you remember, but you know, what you really should remember is that was a fantastic pickup. I mean, Pedro pitched really well for them from August to the end, and that was not a given that the Phillies were going to win the division that year. So Pedro was a big pickup, and he did pitch well in the playoffs. He had a, you know, rough game there at the end, but anybody could have had one rough game. You know what I mean?
And I got to admit, I got to let the listeners know, and I've let other people know, I'm sure, you know, the listeners are new and different every time to this show, but I was at Game 5 in 09. I was still on the high from the win. Cliff Lee, the Phillies, you know, like, then the next night, I believe it was, when I heard who was starting for the Phillies, I had a bad feeling in my stomach that this is the end of the road.
Who's your daddy?
Yeah.
You know, like chanting of who's your daddy there, right?
Yeah, it was, you know, a little surreal. And I wish he could have overcame that and, you know, Phillies won and forced a Game 7 or whatever. And
it's a shame because he pitched Game 2 at the NLCS and went 7 innings, shutout innings, only allowed 2 hits against the Dodgers. So then in the World Series in Game 2 at Yankee Stadium, he went 6 innings. He allowed 3 earned runs, but only 6 hits. He struck out 8. He made a quality start. So he had 2 quality starts in the postseason before that that Game 6, you know, I won't call it a debacle, but he got whacked around a little bit in that Game 6. So, you know, he pitched, you know, otherwise he went 5-1 for the Phillies over 9 starts with a 3.63 ERA. And he was pitching basically as the, you know, fourth or fifth starter. So,
yeah.
Pedro certainly did his job in 2009.
He did end up being a good pick. It was just unfortunate that Game 6. And, you know, I don't blame it on him that the Phillies lost the World Series. Somehow
they don't get there probably without him.
Yeah, they did lose it. But going back to the World Series games, did you ever get a chance to go to one of the games in 08 or 09?
I did not. I was working at the time, you know, as a sergeant in Philadelphia Police Department, and I had a couple of chances to slip my uniform on down and slip down there and get into the ballpark, but they were really, unless you were assigned there, they right. were really discouraging anybody from trying to do that, unless you were right. actually working it.
Right.
And I just, you know, at that point, it wasn't that big a deal to me. You know, I didn't mind sitting at home and watching the ball game when I wasn't working. I did get to go to game two of the World Series in 1980 as an 18-year-old. So I have my World Series experience from that. It was a big Phillies rally in the eighth inning. My recollection is that, you know, Mike Schmidt and Bake McBride did something special there late in the game. I think McBride had a big hit. So, you know, I remember the Phillies pulled it out late. They were losing. I think they beat Quisenberry in that game. So that series, you know, the Phillies win the first World, and everybody remembers, you know, Phillies won their first World Series ever. And yeah. But it was, I think some people forget how tough that Kansas City team was with George Brett and company. The Phillies won that in six games. But that game that I was at, the game two, they were trailing in that game and pulled it out late with some big clutch hits. And then they go back to Kansas City and lose two straight. And then game five, they're down in the ninth inning. It was a big Del Unser base hit. I think he doubled. It scored Schmidt for all the way from first base. Uh-huh. I like to, when I run into people who don't really know this about Mike, Mike Schmidt, an underrated part of his game. We all know about the, you know, home runs, and we all know about the defensive greatness that Schmidt had, all the gold gloves. But one underrated part of Schmidt's game was his speed. He was a very fast player. I mean, he wasn't like Ricky Henderson lightning fast, but he had speed, Schmidt, a very athletic ball player. Mm-hmm. And it's perfectly highlighted. And if anybody ever wants to do it for yourself. Go out and Google Game 5, 1980 World Series, ninth inning, Mike Schmidt. And watch Schmidt's earlier in the game, he had bunted or threatened to bunt. And so when we come to the ninth inning with the Phillies trailing against Kansas City, that threat of Schmidt laying down a bunt ends up pulling George Brett in to play closer. And what does Schmidt do? He smashes one directly to the left of Brett. And if Brett had been playing back on the AstroTurf like he normally would have, he'd have fielded that ball and thrown Schmidt out. But because he's playing up to mitigate the threat of Schmidt possibly bunting for a base hit, he gets the ball smashed just to his left, Brett does, and it's such a hot shot, he can't handle it up that close. Schmidt reaches on a single, infield single, and then they bring up Del Unser to pinch hit. And what does Unser do? He just typical Del Unser, you know, that year in 1980, he was clutch pinch hitter, as he was for the Phillies for a few years before that. But he delivers a shot into the right field corner, rolls around. Schmidt goes all the way first to home for the tying run. So, you know, and the Phillies go on to win. So, and that gives them a 3-2 lead in the series. And then they win it, you know, 4-1, they win it in six games. But it was never, that series was never really in the bag. You know, there were a lot of tight games, and they lost two games in the middle, and all, you know, very tight in games two and five as well. So that's my World Series experience. It was 1980, unfortunately, so not 2008-09.
Yeah, I had the Sunday plan for a couple years there in Citizens Bank Park. In 2008, I just happened to get lucky, buy the tickets for the postseason, and I got game five of the World Series was one of the games. And prior to that, in April, I had planned a vacation with my wife. We were going down to Tampa, of all places, that October. So we were down there when the Phillies were in the World Series already, waiting for their opponent. And I ended up putting them on eBay and selling my tickets to game five, because at that time I could have went to Tampa. I could have got tickets to go to Tampa and see the game, not good tickets, mind you, but World Series fever was fervent around the Philadelphia area.
Sure.
And you know, everybody wanted to go to the game. So I says, well, let me put these tickets up for sale. With the money I was going to get, I could pay for the next season of a whole Sunday plan for two people.
Right, right.
So I was like, you know, it's a no-brainer for me. Ends up, I didn't get to see the Phillies win the World Series, which would have been a complete thrill to me. I don't regret doing it, though, especially with the two-night type of break that they had. They had the one game where it started and it rain delayed. I think they had to wait, what, two nights to start?
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
And that wasn't even the best of nights. And, you know, but, yep, the game that could have been my World Series winner, I sold, so... Yeah.
Better to see them win a series than lose. In 2010, we had our season ticket plan, and in 2010 we saw Roy Halladay's no-hitter against Cincinnati, which was a complete high, obviously. But then we also had tickets for the Giants series, the NLCS, in, I guess it was game six, when they got eliminated. So I was actually there when we were there, you know, in our seats for most of the game. And in fact, early in that game, the Phillies fans was very similar to what they did to Bert Hooten back in Black Friday in 1977. But that's a history lesson in itself. But for those Phillies fans old enough to remember, the booing off the mound of Bert Hooten back in 77, what the Phillies fans did in game six of the Giants series was very similar to what they did to Jonathan Sanchez of the Giants, virtually booed him off the mound. And the Phillies took an early lead. The Giants, I think they won it. I remember we had a perfect angle for it. I think it was Jose Uribe hit a late homer in like the eighth inning or something like that, that gave the Giants the lead. And you know, trying to beat the crowd, you know, my wife and I left our seats and started leaving the ballpark, but we stopped and watched right from almost behind home plate on the way out. We stopped to watch because there were, you know, it was a close game. We still had a chance. So I think Utley was on base. Ryan Howard was up and Brian Wilson was pitching for the Giants. And, you know, in my head, I'm just envisioning, you know, Brian, you know, like we had seen so many times in 2006 and 7 and 8 and 9, you know, I was envisioning Ryan Howard delivering that extra base hit and Utley running around and the Phillies tying it and everybody going crazy. And then they win it. And, you know, we go to game seven and Howard struck out against Brian Wilson. And so the Giants are jumping all over the mound at Citizens Bank Park. And, it was a tough pill to swallow, you know, because we had been in the NLCS, we'd been in the World Series, won the World Series in 08, been in it in 09. And here we were in 2010, back in the NLCS late, you know, with a chance to go to game seven. And, you know, you just felt like you still had that great team, but they just didn't quite do it.
Yeah,
it was still a good team. Obviously we saw what happened the following year in 2011, you know, they had the best record in baseball, but, to be there when they suffer that elimination, you know, to watch how many times did we see Ryan Howard strike out, you know, in his career, you know, thousands of times, you know, but you know, you also saw him come through as a hero so many times. So here to watch him strike out and for it to be the ultimate strikeout, he strikes out and the series is over, you know, it was really, you know, demoralizing. And we just turned right around and headed for the exit, you know, because everybody was headed for the exit then.
Yeah. He did carry the Phillies on his back for a number of games there, almost like a Schmidt did in the 80s and the 70s for the Phillies at various times. I haven't seen that yet from Harper. Harper's not a carry on my back type of player yet for the Phillies, in my opinion. I didn't see him like picking the whole team up and trying to,
you know,
carry.
His first season, I was seeing that. And then, last year I throw last year out a lot because of COVID. I mean, last year was just so disjointed for everybody in baseball that I kind of like, I give anything a pass for last year. So yeah. Harper's first year, there were periods where he did that. He carried the team on his back and said, you know, come with me, fellas. But, you know, and this year he had a slow start, but he has picked it up a little bit lately. So he's in his prime right now, and he's going to be for the next 2 or 3 years, maybe 4 or 5 years. So Bryce Harper, the key is going to be Bryce Harper staying as healthy as possible. You know, if we have a healthy Bryce Harper, we're going to get, I have enough faith in what I've seen over the last decade, Harper's talent, natural talent, that I think we're going to see those kind of periods where it's, you know, he is in the center of Phillies winning baseball. And it's not like a game winning, but I mean a winning team. So, maybe that's being, you know, overly hopeful on my part, but that's what I really believe, that I believe that this team is close. I don't know what it's going to take to push them over the top. That's what Dave Dombrowski was brought here to do. Put this team over the top, find those pieces. So I'm going to be curious to see how he works over the next, you know, few weeks, especially.
Yeah. Yeah, if anything, like you said, he could bolster the bullpen. That would be number one. You need two middle relief stoppers. We saw Hector Neris do fairly well today. I think he gave up a run even around the fifth inning when he pitched. But we need two guys that you can get the ball in the hands and have a legitimate feeling that the Phillies can close a game out and hold on to a lead. A closer and a stopper, you know.
Well, they got out of that seventh, so we're now in the bottom of the eighth. Phillies are still leading 5-4, and it is Ranger Suarez. He gave up a leadoff hit, so the Red Sox have the tying run at first base. Ranger Suarez is in the game, bottom of the eighth inning. Phillies up 5-4. So. And like you said, we've got to get people who can hold things down. And Suarez has done pretty well for them so far. He's been almost a revelation. So yeah. Knock wood, you know, hopefully he can keep that up. And, you know, we'll see. It looks like we're in for a nail biter of an ending here at Fenway Park.
We're going to have to stretch the podcast to the end of the game for sure. We can't let our listeners.
Well, we got a whole inning to go, Rich. That could be a half hour.
We can't let our listeners hang on the edge to know if we made it into the All-Star break at 500. But getting back to tonight's festivities around the All-Star draft. Gathering is the MLB draft. And the Phillies have the 13th draft pick overall. Who do they go for, do you think? Or what kind of position are they going to look to fill, would you think, as opposed to who?
You know, there was a – I saw a – some nice pieces earlier that had the Phillies maybe going after a local product, Benny Montgomery. Benny Montgomery is an outfielder from Redland High School. I've seen some people thinking that he's going to go sooner, maybe to the Rockies. It's interesting because there's no, I've looked at a number of mock drafts. I'm not big on mock drafts because they're just somebody's opinion. You know, they really don't have any basis anywhere in reality. The talent this year, there's no consensus number one player. There's no like Steven Strasburg or Bryce Harper or that kind of guy. There are a number of interesting talents, and there are going to be some good players that come out of this draft. But I think there's a good chance that the Phillies picking 13th overall could come out with the best player in this draft. I think this draft, as much as any that I've seen in recent years, and I followed a draft pretty close, is a real crapshoot. I think it's a real total roll the dice kind of deal. So I think what the Phillies are going to do is, in their war room, if you will, They're probably going to have, you know, I'm sure they have their own idea of who they would like, but who you think is going to be there in that 10 to 15 range, and they're at 13, all those guys might be gone by then, or guys who you think are going to go in the top 10, a number of them may slide for various reasons, whether it's contract reasons or, you know, contract demand reasons, or, you know, just the teams in that top 10 decide to do. So I'm not going to tell you that I have any clue who the Phillies are going to pick. I would like one guy that I really like, I just don't think he's going to be there for their pick, is a right-hander, high school right-hander from Oklahoma named Jackson Jobe. He's supposedly, there are some people who believe he's the best high school pitcher in the draft by a wide margin. But high school pitchers are frequently, you know, there's something that's a lot of teams are afraid of, high school pitcher. They're usually far away. You know, you're talking about 18-year-olds, you know, so you're talking about maybe a 5-year developmental plan. But the Phillies aren't, you know, don't seem to be afraid, you know, to go for that. It's a long range payoff, though. It's not, you know, my preference historically is towards college players. I want somebody who can impact the team, like a Nola coming out or a Bohm coming out, who can impact the team maybe in their second or third year, you know, after the draft. But to get that elite kind of talent, sometimes you have to roll the dice and go for the really mega talented high school guy, and you got to wait it out and hope they stay healthy and hope they continue their developmental plan and hope you can develop them well. So I like Jackson Jobe, and that's who I hope the guy is. Could be somebody like, I've seen Sam Bachman, who's a right-hander out of Miami, Ohio. I've seen them, you know, attached to Benny Montgomery locally, although it's whether he's there or not, who knows. Left-handed pitcher Jordan Wicks out of Kansas State. There's an outfielder from Boston College named Sal Frelick. There are catchers, you know, who I hope they don't take. I'm not big on catchers. To me, catchers are the biggest, you know, crapshoot. I mean, catchers sometimes don't develop until they're often don't develop until they're in their mid to even upper 20s. So, you know, especially if you take a high school catcher, you're talking about, you're not going to see that kid. I mean, there are only so many Pudge Rodriguez's. You're not going to see that high school catcher for another 7 years, maybe, as an impact player in baseball. College, even a college catcher might take you, you know, 4, 5, 6 years to develop a catcher to the point where he's an impact player in Major League Baseball. So there are some that could fall in the Phillies range, but I would look for them more to go for a pitcher, possibly an impact outfield bat, especially if the kid Benny Montgomery is still there, the local kid. But Benny Montgomery he's an outfielder, and he's a high school outfielder. So, you know, the Phillies got burned with Mickey Moniak, who is a high school center fielder. That's what Montgomery is. So do they, you know, do they go down that path again? You know, so this is, you know, I have my thoughts on this draft, Rich, but my biggest thought, and I think that maybe it's coming out in the way that I'm describing things, is that I've used the word about 5 times already. It's a real crapshoot tonight. They're going to come out of it with a nice prospect at 13, but that's all he's going to be as a prospect. And we're just going to see what happens after that. And that's really, it's really going to be the same way with any team's first round pick tonight, including the first overall pick. So I have interest in this draft. I think it's going to be very interesting. I'll be watching a little bit of the draft tonight. I'll be following along with that. But it's only for interest's sake, because, you know, getting a guy who you can say, yeah, this is the future of our team, that's not the case. You know, you're going to guy, you're going to say, okay, that's good. He's a nice talent. Let's get him into the organization, get him started. We'll see you in 3 to 5 years. That's the bottom line.
Right. I was just reading up a little bit about that 2016 draft where the Phillies had the first overall pick. But really on that year, it ended up to be that the whole pool of talent, as you alluded to this year, wasn't quite, you know, up to par or, you know, superstars being mined out of it. Of course, a few pitchers in this draft tonight that'll take place look pretty decent. In fact, Leiter's relative there, I believe his son is in the draft from Vanderbilt. And way back in 2016, when the Phillies picked Mickey Moniak, we had Jay Groom from the New Jersey area, and there was a lot of articles about him and whether the Phillies should try to pick him. And apparently he had some issues going through school and things that may have come back to haunt him, that sort of thing. And he hasn't even really made it to the majors yet. He's still in the minors for the Boston Red Sox. So I don't know if you can say that Mickey Moniak is a bust for the Phillies, but certainly at a number one pick, I think they expected a little bit more production out of that number one pick.
Well, you expect a lot more, right? Right. So, yeah, you know, the shame for the Phillies is that was another draft where there just was no consensus, you know, overall pick. And the Phillies, of course, have the first overall pick, you know, for the first time in, you know, almost 20 years. And you know, the shame of it is that, you know, they couldn't get that number one pick in, you know, in a year when there was a Harper talent or a Strasburg talent out there. So they were just, you know, they took a shot. Moniak was a very talented kid. He was a high school kid who already was very talented and you were projecting. And it just, you know, it just didn't work out. They had the 10th overall pick the year before that, and they did the same thing. They went with Cornelius Randolph. He hasn't panned out really either. So they really, you know, those first round picks, you know, just really didn't work out. But like you said, other players who were picked in that first round around Moniak, they haven't worked out much either. Nick Senzel was the number two pick. He's had some moments with the Reds in the big leagues, but nothing special. Maybe the guy that so far has been the best pick in that first round was Ian Anderson, who was third overall to the Braves. But, you know, he's got a long way to go yet. He's still a young pitcher. A lot of the guys, when you look down that draft, there were names. A.J. Puck has been injured. Braxton Garrett has been injured as pitchers. They went, you know, like sixth and seventh overall. Matt Manning just finally debuted this year with the Tigers. Kyle Lewis had a nice year last year for the Mariners, but he's been hurt this year. So the draft is, you know, it's really a crapshoot. And you can get a good player. You know, the Phillies are going to get a good player at 13 overall tonight. It's, again, it's just a wait and see, and let's just hope for the best.
Yeah, we'll keep our eye on who that player is, and we'll talk about him during the next Phillies podcast. And let's keep in mind as well, back to Moniak, he's only 23 right now, and just read something that, you know, you got to throw last year out. You can't include that, although it was included for the major leagues, all of the stats and everything, but that's a year of development for him that really wasn't. So
yeah, but, you know the thing that's bothering, you know, the thing that worries me about Moniak is that he looked like he had been progressing before COVID. He broke out a little bit, if you will, at Clearwater in 2018. And then built on that at Reading in 2019. And like you said, he was still young. He was only 21 in 2019 and he seemed like he was finally starting to pick it up. He had 11 home runs, but Reading is known also as an offensive ballpark. But now this year, he's playing at AAA Lehigh Valley, and he's only hitting 220, with a 288 on base percentage. He struck out 59 times in 209 plate appearances. That's just not acceptable. I mean, his talent, his power has been up a little bit. He's hitting the ball with a little more authority. He's got 8 homers. He's got 34 RBIs. But he's just not hitting. I mean, 220 isn't going to cut it. A 288 on base percentage isn't going to cut it. Striking out 59 times in 209 plate appearances, that's more than once every 4 plate appearances. Moniak just has not progressed this year. If anything, he may have regressed a little. So he right now, you have to consider Mickey Moniak as a bust, a complete bust, especially when you consider it as the number one overall pick. And that's a shame. A shame that the Phillies lost out on that. But like I said, it's not the only one. The year before, they lost out on Cornelius Randolph at 10th overall. So there have been other picks. You know, the Phillies need to really start hitting on these picks. I like Alec Bohm. He's taken some criticism, rightfully so. But I think over the long term, this kid can hit. And he's not a high school kid who we're developing. This was an elite college hitter. And he is, I think he's shown in his moments that he's got the talent to hit at the Major League Baseball level. It might take him, you know, a little more time, but I think we're going to see a good hitter out of Alec Bohm. Where he's going to end up defensively, ultimately, I'm not really sure. But, you know, time will tell with that. He has shown the ability to play third base in the big leagues, but he's also made a number of boneheaded plays. I'm only imagining that when you demonstrate that you have the physical talent to make really good plays at times, you have that in you. So if you have it in you to do it once, why don't you have it in you to do it every time? It's there physically. It's just a question of confidence. It's a question of continuity. Just keep playing him. I don't think Bohm is a guy that you need to send down to the minor leagues. I think Bohm's a guy that you need to just say, hey, he's going to have some growing pains. Let him have the growing pains and keep him in the mix. Let him learn from guys like, you know, Harper and Real Muto and McCutcheon how to be a big leaguer. And I think we're going to have a good one with him. I think Aaron Nola was a good pick. He's already demonstrated that he's been high up in the Cy Young voting. He's at the very least a number two starter in the big leagues right now. So they've hit on a couple of them. They have a young kid's their top position prospect right now, Bryson Stott, who could be a shortstop, could end up as a third baseman. I think they're hoping that he's their long-term shortstop, and he's looked really good this year in the minor leagues. So that's a really positive development for the Phillies developmental program, is to have a high-ranked kid like Bryson Stott perform in the minor leagues. And he's setting himself up to, you know, DD has a year to go on his contract next year, but if Stott continues to perform at the minor league level, you might see, you know, maybe they'll move on, deal DD next year at some point, or maybe they'll go through next season with him and then Stock can take over the year after that. It's only good news for the Phillies if Bryson Stock continues to produce at the minor league level. Spencer Howard's had a couple of nice starts in the minor leagues, and that's what the Phillies need from him. He's another high draft pick of recent years, their top pitching prospect. He needs to just get stretched out as a starter. Forget this talk about making him a reliever. Spencer Howard is a starting pitcher in the big leagues. And I think you'll see him in the Phillies pitching rotation on a regular basis from Jump Street next season. So I'm trying to peek in on what we're doing here this year. We just got out of the eighth inning. So the Phillies are
I was
still up 5-4. Yeah, that's what
I was watching it the whole time.
Yeah, I got
bases
one eye on
loaded.
That.
Loaded.
Yeah, I was the same thing. I'm like, I'm trying to think of good things to say, but I'm watching the Phillies game.
Yeah,
5-4, they got out of that eighth inning. So
I was watching the bases as they filled up on MLB.com. But Ranger Suarez pulls it out of the eighth inning, somehow gets out of a bases loaded jam with a ground ball hit and out, and we're still hanging by a thread here in the last game of the end of the first half, so to speak. I had a personal interest in Mickey Moniak a little bit. My cousin actually was friends with their family growing up, as he was growing up in California, out in San Diego. So when I heard that the Phillies drafted him, I knew my cousin was friendly with their family and probably knew Mickey Moniak from a very young age because they were apparently neighbors. So I hope Mickey still pulls it through somehow and, you know, gets to be a big leaguer on the Phillies, or maybe he could be a trade dangler there with some proper, I don't know if the Phillies have a place for him even as their current team stands. So maybe, you know, being a number one pick, only thing he's got going against him, as you said, was his average right now. And he's not exactly lighting the AAA up on fire there. So for his trade bait, maybe just the fact that he was a first pick, first number one overall draft. Can you trade a guy like that? I think the Phillies probably could.
Moniak?
Yeah.
I mean, they certainly could trade him. It's, you know, anybody, you could trade anybody, but Moniak would have value, I'm sure, to somebody. I'm sure there's somebody out there who would say, you know, like you mentioned earlier, 23 years old, you know, he has some pop. He can defensively, we know he can play the game defensively. We've seen him up here. So Moniak, you know, just can he hit enough to contribute at the big league level is the thing. Like, I think there's always going to be a place. Mickey Moniak's going to be, you know, he's, first of all, he's already got his money. You know, he made his money in his signing bonus. So, you know, the kid was a millionaire, you know, from Jump Street. So now it's just a question of can he establish himself in the big leagues at all, even as a reserve player? I mean, you can carve out, you know, nice. We've seen plenty of guys do it, carve out a decade long career as a fifth, sixth type outfielder, fourth, fifth, sixth outfielder. Moniak has the defensive chops already to do that. He can play center field. He can play any of the outfield positions. So, but when you're hitting 220 and you're striking out in, you know, almost a third of your at-bats, I mean, that's something that's hard to overcome. Big league teams have a hard time giving a guy like that a shot.
Could that lend itself to the fact that maybe he's not being coached as well as one could be? I mean, that's always a question mark with a player, and whether or not I'm trying to build value in him. If he doesn't play for the Phillies, I'd like to get a nice pitcher for him.
Well, you know what, Rich, you and me talking about Mickey Moniak isn't going to build value for him. What's going to build value for Mickey Moniak is Mickey Moniak performing, you know what I mean? Producing, you know, he has to be able to hit better than 220. You know, that's a bottom line at the minor league level. I mean, if you're hitting 220 in the minor leagues, what are you going to do when you get up here and you get, you know, filthy stuff being thrown at you every night? You know, we kind of saw, you know, Moniak's never really had an everyday role with the Phillies. But when he has gotten to play up here, he hasn't produced on a consistent level. So he's got to get to a point where he's producing consistently in the minor leagues. And he's not running out of time, but I think he's certainly running out of time to prove that he was worth the number one overall pick in the draft. Yeah. As far as a role someday in Major League Baseball again, or whether it's here or somewhere else, whether he can make himself even moderate, you know, trade fodder. Right now he's like a throw-in in a trade. He would be like, you know, if they were going to deal, or he'd be a trade for something lesser, you know, so maybe some minor league pitcher that they liked from another team. Somebody likes Moniaksville and they could swap them, but it's not going to be the kind of pitcher who was a first round talent. Maybe some bullpen help. That's the kind of deal. Maybe as we get closer to the trade deadline, a guy like Moniak might get dealt, because Dombrowski, he's known for dealing prospects to get big league help.
Yeah.
If some team out there has a serviceable big league reliever who is going to be a free agent after this season and who is having a nice season this year and who has a track record of success, and that team is losing, you know, and they're not going anywhere. That's the kind of team that maybe say, hey, we'll take a chance on Moniak and we'll give you, you know, 32-year-old, you know, Joe Blow, the reliever. And Dombrowski may take that, and that may end up being a great deal for the Phillies. You know, if you can get a real reliever in here who can, you know, lock down the seventh, eighth innings in exchange for a Moniak who may be a washout prospect, maybe the kid needs a change of scenery. That'll help him. Maybe it'll give the team who's trading for him, a piece that they can say, hey, we got the former number one overall draft pick. He's hit some home runs. You know, he has a chance to play in the big leagues long term. And we gave up, all we gave up to get him was a 32-year-old reliever who we weren't going to be able to re-sign next year anyway. So Moniak is the kind of kid who can go in that kind of deal to help the Phillies now. So that wouldn't surprise me. A pitcher like Adonis Medina, you know, the Phillies may finally be saying to themselves, he's been our number 3, 4, 5 prospect for a while, but he's starting to drift down those lists and he's starting to get a little older. And, you know, if they really believed that he was a big league pitcher, they would have given him the same shots that they gave Spencer Howard. So, you know, Adonis Medina is another guy that I think that you could see get moved at the trade deadline for some help. And he's the kind of guy who could end up catching on if he stays healthy and maybe helping the back end of the right team's, you know, starting rotation. So I think they're going to see some of these prospects from the Phillies. I think you're going to see some of these kids that we've heard their name for years, the guys like the Randolphs, guys like the Moniaks, guys like the Medinas. I think you could see them get moved before the trade deadline.
Yeah, and I was just going to praise the work of Ronald Torres in the game today. 3 for 4 with 3 ribbies on the game, single-handedly helping the Phillies win this game. If they pull it out, they're still hanging by a thread. But he gets caught stealing at second base in the top of the ninth. I wonder if Girardi put the run on this. Travis Jankowski ended up with a walk right afterwards, but Torres was picked off trying to steal second, top of the ninth with a 1-run lead. Phillies would have had 2 men on with Gene Segura up at bat right now. Could have been these are the things that the Phillies, and I got to be honest with you, I haven't been following with them 100% of every game, but moves like that is a little curious to me.
Yeah. I'm sure a guy like Torres, Girardi has a lot of confidence in him, and he's really a Girardi guy. I'm sure he was brought here on Girardi's recommendation, and he's turned out to be a nice little find. I mean, he's helped them out a lot in considering some of the injuries that the Phillies had, especially when they had both Segura and Didi out for a little stretch. So Torres has had a nice game today, but as you said, you know, he gets caught stealing there at a bad time. But we still got that 1-run lead, and you know, let's see what happens here in the ninth inning. It's going to be bottom of the ninth. It's going to be a little hairy, and hopefully we can hold on. And that's, you know, you can't. They're not all going to be blowouts. You know, hopefully we can. We got the lead. It's the ninth inning. It's time to get to 500. You know, Rich.
As usual for the Phillies, they're not going to make it easy. Not going to be an easy thing. Speaking of not easy, Hoskins, 1 for 3 today, 2 strikeouts. He's batting .235. He's kind of down for a batter as the Phillies just make the third out of that inning with Segura. So here it comes, top middle of the ninth here. Phillies have to hold on, and then we'll wrap up the doors of this nice long podcast. I'm glad we got a chance to do this show leading up to the All-Star break. And let me take just a minute to let our folks know where they can find you on the internet, Matt.
Two best places to find me are my website, which is mattvz.com. That's MATTV as in Victor, EA, S as in Sam, EY. So mattvz.com. or at Phillies Bell on Twitter. I also have at Phillies Bell on Instagram, but it's much more active on Twitter. A lot of Phillies history information every day. Phillies in-game commentary a lot of times. I share all the important, you know, Philly articles that I can find, relevant news, Phillies articles that I can find there. So it's a really good extra, you know, if you're following all of the big, you know, more well-known Philly sites. But if you add at Phillies Bell to your collection, you're going to get some good stuff. I'm going to give you some good material on the Phillies. And then at the website, I haven't been writing as much as I had in the past, but I intend to pick it up a little bit more. I have some book reviews, baseball book reviews that are coming up. I do my MLB power rankings still. That's the last piece that I did. That was back on 4th of July weekend, last weekend. I got a monthly piece that I get published in the IBWAA newsletter, the Internet Baseball Writers Association of America newsletter, that I share on my website. And I'm in the midst of, I just went to this idea of creating a series on great players, Hall of Fame players who played the bulk of their career in the 70s and 80s. That was kind of like when I came to age with the game. The 70s and 80s were my late childhood, preteen, teen years, and then into and through my 20s. And so the first piece that I did back in May for the IBWAA newsletter was on Nolan Ryan. And then in June, I did a piece on Paul Molitor, who was probably my favorite non-Philly player during that period. So Nolan Ryan and Paul Molitor. Now this month, I haven't completely settled on a topic yet, but I think that I submitted, I submitted another Hall of Famer's name to them, and you know, we'll see who I end up writing. But you know, you're going to see there's a lot at my website on historical Philly information, and up-to-date stuff. You know, I did a Phillies preview before the season started, so MattVZ.com and at Phillies Bell on Twitter. And are we starting here yet in the ninth inning?
Yeah, yep, you know, we are. We got Ranger Suarez.
Rangers back on the mound.
With a two-inning save attempt. That's going to be interesting, of course.
Hey, 500, whatever it takes, Rich. Let's get to 500 at the break.
And it looks like the Phillies are going to win something else if they hold on here. And the Braves look like they're going to lose. So the Phillies might be in the second place with a 500 record going into the All-Star break if things hold as they are right now. If the Phillies end up winning, Braves end up losing, they're down right now.
If Ranger can get through this, he's going to have earned it because he's navigating through to 3-4-5 hitters. Yeah. And he just got J.D. Martinez, struck him out. Red Sox number three hitter. But now he's got to go up against Xander Bogaerts. And then after that, it'll be Rafael Devers. And those are tough hitters. I mean, this is the Red Sox, you know, stars right here.
Yeah, Bogaerts is .322 batting on the year. So, it'll be a test.
And Bogaerts homered earlier today. So,
yeah. Of course, you can find the home for the Phillies Talk podcast at fightingphillies.com on the internet. That's the blog home of Phillies Talk podcast. And I just got a new hotline. If you have a message for us or you want to share some information, chip in some info that we can play on the air, or if you don't want me to play on the air, please tell me that as well in the message audio. You can call us 609-365-0002. That's the Phillies voicemail hotline to get on here at Phillies Talk Podcast, area code 609-365-0002. Leave us a message and audio message. We'll get it on the air for you if you want. And like I said, if you don't want it to be played, let me know that as well. You can get in touch with us as well, rich@fightingphillies.com. and be glad to put your comment on our next Phillies Talk podcast.
You had mentioned Rhys Hoskins, Rich, and while he is hitting 234, his career average is 238. You know, so Rhys isn't an average hitter. Before coming into the season, I named in my Phillies preview, I named Rhys as the as a key to the Phillies possibly be able to reach in the postseason. That kind of like wild card player who people were a little down on, but who I thought had the potential to really step up and be an impact guy and be that kind of guy that pushes you over the top by his performance. Not the guy that would carry you, not the Bryce or the JT, but that kind of that guy that nobody was kind of like looking at as a big player who could actually produce more than was expected. And I think he is. He's leading the team with 20 home runs and 55 RBIs. And I just that much speaks for
him. If you heard that sound effect, strike him out. They just struck him out. There's two outs. Phillies one out away. Sorry.
I was wondering what the heck was going on there.
Got him on a strikeout. I mean,
yeah, I was into my Rhys Hoskins deal, but yeah, two strikeouts there by Ranger Suarez. So it's down to Rafael Devers here. And it's left on left, so that helps us a little bit. But he's got power, this kid, so you got to watch out for him. But back to Hoskins real quick before we hopefully wrap it up here. He's on a pace for upper 30s and homers, close to 100 RBIs, Rich. And, you know, Rhys is a streaky hitter. You know, so if he gets hot at the right time, he's certainly put himself in a position for a 40 homer, 100 plus RBI season from the first base position. That's all you can expect, really. I was hoping that Rhys would be more closer to a 250 type hitter than a 238 hitter. And I think if he can be, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a few more hits a week, and it might be extra base hits knowing Rhys, because he's a 21 doubles. He leads the team as well. So, has 41 extra base hits lead the team. So, you know, if Rhys could hit closer to 250 or so than 235, 238, then he's an easy to me 40 home or 100 RBI guy. So there may be some problems still with the Phillies, but Rhys Hoskins is not a problem for the Phillies. You know, like I said, like you were saying, back end of the rotation, maybe a little bit more squared away in the bullpen. Those are the things that we need to be zeroing in on here as the trade deadline approaches. We got two strikes here on Rafael Devers. So let's see if Ranger put them away.
By the way, Suarez, 44 pitches, looking at potentially the last Red Sox batter, but 44 pitches stretched over. Oh, you know what, Rich?
He's got
innings.
4 days off. 4 days off after this. And he's out. We got 20. It. Ground out. Hoskins. And we're at 500.
26 of those were strikes, but a whole 44. There's the 45th pitch, and that's it. That's a ball game.
That's it. We hit the Phillies. We hit the break at 500, Rich.
Wow, I think I'll do a Chris Wheeler.
The Irish jig.
Chris Wheeler.
Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Yeah. And that's the ball game. The Phillies win.
Thrilling.
44 and 44.
Woo.
At the All-Star nail biter. So now taking a look around here, what do we got as far as your New York Mets? What are they doing?
They're going to end up in first place for sure.
Oh, we know. Well, they're in first place at the break.
Yeah,
at the break. That? I mean, we're hoping that they won't be in first place in the end, because that's really the Phillies' only chance to get to the playoffs. But here, the Mets, they went down, right? Today? Did they lose to Pittsburgh 6-5 today?
They probably did, because they were ahead 5-4, and it looks like the Pirates must have rallied.
Yeah. They lost, so 6-5. So now does that? That's their 40th loss. That means the Phillies are within four games of the Mets.
They had
500 within four games, in the loss column, which is what really matters.
And they had a 5-0 lead in that game. I remember looking at my phone on the William Hill betting app and thinking, you know, they were 2,500 to 1 at that time are some ungodly 5,000-1 to win that ball game, being up 5-0 in the first inning, I think. And that's how baseball is. That's why I love it. You can't think that a team is going to hold on to a lead. You just can't.
That's why I don't bet, Rich. I don't bet on anything. Yeah, I only got so much money. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm not a gambler. You're not.
Can't lose it.
No, I can't afford to lose any. You know, I don't understand these people who are, you know, on these betting apps all the time. These betting apps, casinos, stuff like that. They're not in business to lose money. And you know what? They don't lose money. You know, so nobody's getting rich off of these apps and all. They're just the, you know, I hate to call anybody a degenerate, but you got a lot of degenerate gamblers out there. It's the bottom line, supporting these apps and these casinos. And no, it's just a shame. I just hopefully nobody's losing their house.
And there is probably.
Yeah.
As we go into the All-Star break, let me hit this Phillies endo music here for us, bringing us out of this podcast. We hope everyone has a good All-Star break, whether or not you watch the game or not. Matt, thank you very much for a long Phillies talk going into.
Hey, we got a win, Rich.
Yes, we did.
We brought home a win.
Take care, and we'll talk to you after the All-Star break on the Phillies talk.
Have a nice break. Go Phils.